Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Access Bank PLC FY 2020 Investors and Analysts Conference Call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions when prompted. For the benefit of the participants who have joined via the HD web phone, please ensure that you're given a microphone permission to make yourself audible before accessing the question queue. For the benefit of the participants who have connected via the webcast, you're welcome to pose your questions in the question box provided on your screen. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I'd now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Herbert Wigwe. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, Julie, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're all welcome to Access Bank's full year 2020 earnings call. Let me start by thanking you all for dialing to our investor call. We have earlier prepared a detailed presentation to share with you now. On the call with me today are Roosevelt Ogbonna, who is our Group Deputy Managing Director, Craig Jubberman, who is Executive Director of Risk Management, Ade Bajomo, our Executive Director of IT and Operations, Victor Ichimoku, our Executive Director of Personal Banking, Chizoma Okoli, our Executive Director of Business Banking, Hadiza Ambursa, Executive Director, Commercial Banking North, and Mr. Seyi Kumapayi, who is our Executive Director. As it brought many challenges, but also showcased our ability to weather the storm and stay focused on our corporate objectives. I'll briefly go over some of the key performance highlights, after which I will allow more than enough time for any questions that you may have. In terms of supporting our customers, staff, and the communities we serve in 2020, like I said, it was a year like no other, and the Nigerian and global economy were significantly affected by the twin shocks of COVID-19 and the fall in oil price. This led to the weakening of the naira, inflation acceleration, economic slowdown, and investment decline. We also felt the impact of the twin shock in the bank in terms of asset quality, profitability, pressure on IT infrastructure, capital, liquidity, as well as how we operated during the pandemic. This notwithstanding, the bank continued to deliver on its mandate. In addition to the support granted by the government and Central Bank of Nigeria to the vulnerable members of the society and key sectors of the economy, we also put in place adequate measures to ensure that the impact of the pandemic was minimized. We're primarily concerned about the safety of our customers and their businesses, ensuring that our office locations are safe for our customers and staff, and that the safety of our workforce is not compromised. To minimize service disruption during the period, we increased investment in our IT infrastructure to ensure that our alternative channels were up at all times, secure for our customers, to ensure that transactions were carried out in a secure manner, and also supported our staff to be able to work effectively in the face of the new normal. We initiated various media campaigns to sensitize our customers on medical and non-medical preventive measures advised by experts against COVID, to also raise the awareness of the risk of cyber threats and suggested ways to keep their accounts and funds protected, and also to enlighten our customers of other viable alternatives to access our services conveniently and reliably. In safeguarding our location and protecting our workforce, we established a split team arrangement, closed collaboration spaces as well to prevent gathering, periodic sanitizing, of course, of workspaces, virtual meetings, and made provisions for our staff to work remotely. On global network, our customer base and digital capacity, as of 2020, we had 46.2 million customers, which speak to our coverage and scale. We also have a strong and growing digital footprint with over 3,000 ATMs spread across geographic locations, 9.8 million digital banking users, and over 49,000 points of sales equipment. Our USSD service has about 7.8 million subscribers. We have a widespread of branches in major cities and financial inclusion centers with over 600 branches and about 58,000 agents. This reflects the sheer scale of our digital footprint and as well as our physical presence. Today, we have presence in 10 African countries, the UK, UAE, and of course, three strategic representative offices in China, India, and Lebanon. On issues relating to gender, and diversity, rating and recognition. Like you know, gender diversity has been extremely important to us. We have almost an equal split between our male and female employees. Our risk ratings are reflective of our strong financial performance, with the risk rating capped by the rating of the sovereign. We maintained our risk ratings except for S&P, which dropped because S&P, of course, downgraded Nigeria during the year. We received several accolades in 2020. Some of these include Africa's Best Bank for SMEs from Euromoney, recognition for deals executed in the agri space, and, of course, one of the ones that we are particularly extremely proud of, which are our sustainability awards. We continue to win all sustainability awards provided by the Central Bank of Nigeria and that by the Karlsruhe Sustainable Finance Awards for the past 5 years. Speaking more on our sustainability efforts and ensuring Access Bank runs in a sustainable manner, we have embraced ESG as part of our lives. Whether it is the diversity of our board or our workforce or the work that we have done with respect to sustainable refinancing, we are the only climate lending bank on the continent. Financial inclusion in Africa is critical given that over 370 million unbanked adults live in the continent. We have over 58,000 inclusion agents in order to ensure that there is greater financial deepening. Let me speak more to the group performance highlights. Our gross earnings grew by 15% year on year to 764.7 billion in the year compared to 666.8 billion in the financial year ended 2019, comprising 64% of interest income and 36% non-interest income. Our interest income went down by 9% year on year to 489.2 billion as a result of the low yield environment. And the key contributors include a 30% growth in interest income from cash and cash equivalents to 12 billion naira, offsetting a 3% decline in interest on loans and advances to customers to 332.6 billion. The decline was driven by repricing of investment grade loans and the CBN's reduction of interest rate on intervention loans. We also saw a 20% year-on-year decline on income and investment securities to 154.6 billion compared to 193.4 billion in the prior year, and this came as a result of the sharp drop in yields of government securities during the year. And this was in spite of a 61% year-to-date growth in the investment securities portfolio. On operating income, we gained 32% year-on-year to 515.3 billion from 389.3 billion in financial year ended 2019. And this came largely as a result of the significant growth in our net trading income and other operating income. And the key drivers of our operating income were as follows. One, there was a 743% growth in net trading income to 114.3 billion from a loss in the financial year ended of 2019 of 17.8 billion. And this was really on the back of net gains on derivative contracts and fixed income securities. We also saw a 27% year-on-year increase in fees and commission to about 116 billion. And this came, from increased transaction velocity across channels and other electronic business that we basically have. And that was a growth of about 151%. We will continue to gain traction on these income lines as we continue to extend our retail offerings. Our retail banking business has consistently driven by a strong focus on consumer lending, payments and remittances, digitization of customer journeys, and customer acquisition on a large scale. We are focused on generating the sustainable revenue across all lines, and all aspects of our business have continued to show significant improvement. Access Bank is truly digital. We are creating products that resolve lifestyle issues of customers, which became extremely important during the lockdown period. Over the period of 3 years, our digital banking revenue has increased on an annual basis by 58% year-on-year, with retail commissions increasing by 34% year-on-year, in spite of the significant reduction in retail fees by Central Bank of Nigeria. In addition to margins, our yield on assets declined by 3.76% year-on-year due to the declining revenue on government securities. However, this decline has been cushioned by the decrease in the cost of funds by 1.69% due to sound treasury management and the yield on our retail lending. With respect to our net interest margin, it declined by about 1.75% to 4.9%, and this was underscored by the drop in asset yields. As our loans continue to improve, and of course with the moderation on cost of funds, we expect to see an improvement in the NIM. Looking at our operating efficiencies, operating expenses was up 27% year on year to 326.5 billion compared to 257.2 billion. However, if you common size this, the increase is just 10%. And this is as a result of the inflationary environment, 50% increase in VAT, increase in cost of operations required by the increase by a large franchise size. The largest contributors to the growth were increased IT and e-business expenses, and regulatory costs, and of course, the AMCON charge, which went up significantly. However, it is important to restate that 2019 numbers only had 9 months of Diamond Bank's financials. And so if you were to now look at it in 2020 and common sense, like I said, you would see that that increase was about 10%, which is below inflation rate. Our cost-to-income ratio has been showing improvements quarter-on-quarter. It declined by 271 basis points to 63.4% in 2020. During the year, our impairment charge increased by 212% to 62.9 billion because of some asset quality issues arising from the pandemic and the need to write off challenged loans. Now, Access UK's, for the first time, had to take significant provisions, and its net impairment was 21 billion naira in 2020. And this accounted for about 34% of the group's net impairment charge. Now, this charge was principally from its structured trade finance portfolio. It is a one-off COVID-related, recoverable, and it's recoverable over the next 12 to 18 months as it is backed by insurance cover from world-class insurers. Accordingly, the group's cost of risk increased by 1% year-on-year to 1.8% in the financial year ended 2020. It was 0.8% in 2019, and so yes, there's about 1% additional, not just 1% increase to it. So it's now 1.8% compared to 0.8% in the previous financial year. Speaking to synergies realized from the merger, at the beginning of the exercise, we had proposed merger synergies of 153.9 billion over 3 years, comprising 99.4 billion naira and 54.4.5 billion in revenue and cost synergies, respectively. Thus far, we have achieved total synergies of 133.4 billion, accounting for 87% of the total synergies proposed, and this is 2 years into the merger. In terms of the balance sheet, we have continued to grow and improve on our deposit mix with deliberate low-cost deposit mobilization. Customer deposits as at 31st December 2020 closed at 5.59 trillion, which is a 31% year-to-date growth from 4.626 trillion in December 2019. The growth was primarily driven by a 46% year-to-date increase in our CASA deposits, so basically our current and savings accounts. And this reflects our enhanced retail presence leveraging on our innovative digital platform. We have continued to grow our low-cost deposits while replacing and repricing the expensive funds in our balance in the books. Total savings account deposits closed at 1.31 trillion at the end of the year, recording a growth of 66%. Subsidiary customer deposits also totaled about 754.7 billion, and that accounted for about 14% of the total group deposits, with the main contributors being Ghana and the UK. In summary, what you would find is that this particular aspect of our business, which has showed high cost at the beginning of 2019, in terms of the overall cost of funds, all right, apart from what we've seen in the interest rate environment, has come down significantly to a sub 3%. I think it's about 2.23% right now. And what that means is that going through 2021, we should see significant pickup as far as the NIM is concerned. Net loans and advances stood at 3.676 trillion as at December 2020, up 15% from 3.26 trillion in December 2019. The growth was witnessed as a result of our deliberate and increased core loan growth. But our foreign currency exposure dropped significantly to 25.9% of the total portfolio in the year due to deliberate efforts to mitigate the currency risks, which are imminent. The group's asset quality remains under check as NPL ratio stood at 4.3% in the year compared to 5.8% in the previous financial year. The key sectors responsible for these are oil and gas services, which is about 42.1%, manufacturing 17.9%, general commerce about 15.9%. We consider this level sustainable and do not expect further deterioration in asset quality. Our capital adequacy ratio was 20.6% on an adjusted basis based on regulatory transition arrangement. Liquidity ratio also closed at 46%, which is well in excess of the regulatory minimum required. Our subsidiaries have also continued to grow and make significant contributions to the group. Subsidiaries' contribution to group performance stood at 28% year-on-year, recording total subsidiaries' profit before tax of 35.7 billion naira. UK and Ghana, of course, accounted for 86% of the total profit before tax for subsidiaries, with a return on average equity of 5% and 27%, respectively. But for the significant loan loss that the UK took, this number would have been significantly higher, as we have seen in previous years. But all subsidiaries recorded a decline in their cost-to-income ratio, but tracing the impact of our effective cost-cutting measures across the group. Our financial inclusion and digital lending continues to grow deeper as we continue to deploy resources to reach the underbanked and the unbanked through our agency network and, of course, you know, leveraging digital technology. Today, we have about 8.638 trillion naira worth of transactions have been recorded from our agency banking transactions through our 59,000 agents in the last financial year. As regards our digital lending, which comprises of our payday loan, small tickets, personal loans, salary advances, and device financing, we have seen an increase in the scale and velocity. Our digital lending value grew by 48% to 105 billion from 71 billion naira in 2019. We also have about 4 million digital loans that were booked in the year 2020, which again represents an increase of 28% from 3.1 million loans that were booked in 2019. We also have seen that our transaction values across all channels have continued to remain strong. Today we have about 33.9 trillion worth of transactions going through our channels, as we saw in 2020. Which is significantly increased from what happened in 2019. As an institution, we are realigning for growth, and we are taking advantage of the opportunities that exist in the market to effectively tap these, and so we'll be transitioning to a holdco structure. The bank has received the approval in principle from the Central Bank of Nigeria for the restructuring of the creation of the holdco, which will consist of 4 subsidiaries in order to tap into the market opportunities that are available in the consumer lending market, in the electronic payment industry, and as well as retail insurance. On our outlook and financial targets for 2021, we remain committed to driving an efficient and sustainable business growth by intensifying efforts to increase or rather to improve our asset quality, to increase transaction banking income by migrating our customers to alternative channels, and creating strong awareness for our flagship retail products. We are going to continue the drive to ensure low-cost deposits that will ensure that and reduce our funding costs, thereby enhancing our liquidity and margins. We will enhance productivity across all our branches and staff and extract value from our existing accounts. We will reduce operating costs by aggressively executing strategic cost-saving initiatives and, of course, continue to drive our major synergies across the respective segments. In view of current realities, we have revised our initial financial year 2020 guidance as follows. Our expectation for 2020 is that we will achieve a return on equity above 20%, cost of risk that will be less than 1.5%, our NPL ratio will be less than 4%, cost of income ratio less than 60%, net interest margin will be more than 5%, our cost of funds will be less than 2.5%, capital adequacy ratio greater than 20%, loan to deposit ratio about 65%, and our liquidity ratio around about or greater than 50%. Despite the continued overhang from COVID and the economic downturn, we expect to see materially better results in 2021 compared to 2020. We believe that the strength of our balance sheet and our growing retail base provides us significant or substantial runway to help mitigate the risks related to COVID-19, as well as accelerate the development and generation of sustainable revenue. Thank you very much, and I will now leave the lines open for questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, for the benefit of other participants who have dialed via the telephone lines, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one on your touchtone phone to place yourself in the question queue. For the benefit of other participants who have connected via the webcast, you're welcome to pose your questions in the question box provided on your screen. The first question from the lines comes from Tunde Ongunleo of SBG Securities.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the call. There's a bit of clarity on your e-banking income. So looking at your USSD volume, you achieved 106% year-on-year. I just wanted to add a sense of the sustainability of this in the light of the end user billing. And also speaking on the total automated debt owed to telcos, like what percentage of those of that debt is attributed to Access Bank? That's on the first question. My second question is on your operating expenses. I want to understand which of these expenses, because looking at your other operating expenses, I noticed there was an increase in communication expenses, IT and e-business expenses, outsourcing expenses, advertisements, cash processing, and stationery. So I wanted to have a sense of, in terms of looking at these expenses, which of these expenses is one-off and which is expected to be a cost in 2021. And then the next one is just to give an update on the OSCO structure. Could you just give a timeline as to when you expect the different subsidiaries to be operational? And then my fourth question is on your Stage 1 loans. So I noticed there was an increase in your Stage 1 loans. And if you could just also give, just tell us in terms of the regulatory forbearance, the intervention fund, what percentage of your loan book is restructured? And then the final question is on the tax impact. So I noticed that there was an increase in your tax impact year on year, and it was quite significant in Q4. If you could just give, shed more light as to what led to the higher tax impact, because I would have expected that the new finance bill could have led to a reduction in taxes. Thank you very much, and that's all for my question.
Okay. Unfortunately, we couldn't hear some of your questions properly, Tunde.
Okay.
I will speak to those that we have. And then you would ask, and I'll ask you to go back if you don't mind, to ask those that we did not hear. Let me speak to the OPEX, and I would also speak to the issue around the holdco. In fact, maybe she should speak to the OPEX. All right, then I'll speak to the issue around the holdco. She would also speak to the tax implications. We just had to talk about the alpha tax implication of the CBT.
Thank you, Herbert. Let me speak to the OPEX specifically. Just like Herbert mentioned, if you look at in 2019, we did the merger in March. We did the merger in March, and so what you saw in 2019 was 9 months of the combined entity and 3 months of. So really, there is a in terms of comparative. So really, if you were to common size overall in aggregate, cost only increased by about 10%. Now, to the things you spoke about, IT, and so if you look at IT and business expense, it's directly related to what you also see on the revenue side. And because of a lot of the business expense, e-channel expense also corresponds to what you are saying. So this is the cost that is generating the revenue on the income side. It's the same thing for comms. Part of what we did as part of ensuring that people could work properly on the branches was to increase the bandwidth in the number of branches. And we've seen the impact in terms of service for the bank. Now, in terms of tax, if you look at 2020, you find out that the tax exempt went down because of the income on treasury bills. I mean, income on treasury tax, and because of the yield on treasury bills that has come down, that also affected the tax exempt that we have gotten in 2020. So that's the really difference between 2019 and in terms of tax. So I think we should repeat the other questions. I think we didn't.
Okay. I'll speak to the whole crew, and then if you don't mind, Tunde, you go back and ask the previous questions. so that we can address them. With respect to HoldCo, in terms of timing, as you know, or you probably don't know, we've received our approval in principle on the various subsidiaries. I think they will all become operational, hopefully, towards the end of the year. But in terms of the HoldCo proper being coming up and fully running, I think you should be able to see it perhaps towards Q4 of this year, worst case, Q1 of next year. Just to add to some of the things which Shay spoke about as far as the operating expenses is concerned, one of the large items you'd have noticed there, obviously, would have been the AMCON charge, which is a very significant charge coming from the combined entity of what was Access and Diamond. It will not come down because, obviously, your balance sheet is not shrinking. But the idea is that we continue to optimize, all right, and we, as we move towards reducing our cost of funds and all of that, even on the same balance sheet side, you should start to see more revenue. But a lot of those costs are variable in nature. We do hope we can try and reduce them, hopefully, through various cost-cutting measures. But, you know, in the main, this is the nature of OPEX, inclusive of AMCON charge, that is required to run the major franchise that we have today. I'll appreciate if you can repeat the first question with respect to e-banking, income, and USSD, and something that has to do with the telcos. All right. And then, of course, the stage one loans. We couldn't hear you.
Okay. So on the stage one loans, I was asking, like, what was the driver of the increase in stage one loans? And also, if you could give a breakdown as to what percentage of the intervention fund, what percentage of your loan book was restructured given the intervention fund? And then the second one on the e-banking income is just related to how you see the end user billing affecting the USSD values. Given that you recorded 116% year-on-year, do you see that reducing over time? And then also in terms of the accumulated debt to the telcos, what percentage of this debt is attributed to Access Bank?
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to speak to the issue around the end user billing and the impact, if you like, on profitability and by the banks to the telcos. And then Greg will speak to what is driving our stage one loans and, of course, the restructured percentage of loans in the year. Today, the end user billing is not going to impact us at all. We were not charging anything other than what, and all we're doing was basically sent to the telcos what they were charging. I think there's a misunderstanding in the market, and people think that we're probably making income from all of that. It's not true. We're just a pass-through, and in fact, what happened was that we're all adopting a corporate billing strategy where the telcos were technically asking the banks to remit money to them, even for transactions that were not closed. And so the banks were taking the risk of unfunded transactions, taking the risk of failed calls, et cetera. And so the desire to create an end-user billing arrangement was for the telcos to basically, all right, charge their customers directly so that we don't have to carry things that have nothing to do with us. So it has absolutely no impact. Now, on what you have referred to as accumulated billings, there is no such thing, and I repeat, no such thing as amounts owed by banks to telcos. Very simply, when they chose to increase price, the bank said, you know what? We don't want to do this service and help you with this service anymore. Why don't you bill your customer directly? And they went on and said no, that they wanted to continue a corporate billing structure even after the bank had written formally. Now, it is true that they continue to provide this service, but this service has nothing to do with the bank, and the banks are not obliged to pay any money. So just to clarify that there is no such thing as an obligation that is due from banks to telcos. We chose not to make a public statement out of this because it was not appropriate for us to be found fighting with telcos in the public. But clearly, there's no amount that is due from any Nigerian bank to the telcos, you know, with respect to end user billing. We want to speak to the issues of stage one loans and percentage of our facilities that were restructured.
Thank you, Herbert. So basically, I mean, as you know, we've reported a few calls back. The nature of work we had to do on the back of the Diamond Bank transaction a couple of years ago. Now, fortuitously, that was actually very good work because putting in the efforts to resolve the loans we inherited from that bank inadvertently helped us even better prepare for the COVID-19 episode when it came. Because by the time COVID came, a lot of those names had been properly structured. The ones that were that had the wrong structures running, probably term loans instead of project facilities, had been properly set up. The ones that were running in dollars, many had been converted to Naira. So basically on the back of those very early proactive work, plus the more aggressive and firm collection strategy, we were able to get them on a firm footing even before COVID came. Now, with the onset of COVID, we had to review all of those again, review the scenarios again, and all the steps we then had to take on top of that, inclusive of names that went to forbearance subsequently, we saw a significant migration from stage 2 to stage 1. So that migration, like I said, is on the back of the early proactive work that was done to ensure that the names we inherited from Diamond Bank continue to perform in a very solid manner, and truly they did. So we were able to now migrate a few of them in the course of the year into stage 1 from stage 2. So that's part of the story. Now, on the back of that, significant pay downs, even on the existing Access Bank facilities. Now, because we were very, very apprehensive about the COVID-19 situation, the early steps that we always take, and this is reflected in our historical trajectory as well. If you go back to 2017, for example, in a period of market turmoil, we anticipated reasonably well, and the steps that we took, including conversions from dollars into Naira, as David has mentioned, a significant shift from about 40% of the loan book that was in dollars had moved to about 25% of the loan book. So all of those stabilized the book, and there's no significant new exposure that are going to be threatened. Rather, we're going to see an uptick in terms of asset quality. So those are the things that you would see. And in the absence of the issue with the UK, you would have seen an even further reduction in the NPA ratio in 2020. Now, with respect to forbearances, we were very, very strict with that. Our approach to it was, if a name is non-performing, it's not going to benefit from forbearance process, because there's no point in burying our heads in the sand. So only names that were performing went into forbearance. No stage 3 name went in there. So that's number one. Number two, we were also very careful in making sure that the loan book that is going in, part of the book that is going into forbearance, also reflected the overall performance of the bank in terms of asset quality. So we expect them to remain performing. The migration that some people would expect, okay, is in forbearance, therefore there's some expectation that it would devolve into NPL or stage 3. That is truly not the case, because these were names that are just going to benefit from the little leeway that they have in managing their cash flows. Therefore, they remain resilient, even in line with the regulator's perspective on keeping the risk sector afloat through this process. So no migration is expected. Any deterioration that will happen will be in the course of business as usual. So, I mean, you cannot say that there shouldn't be any NPLs coming out of forbearances. They are part of the portfolio. But it will not go anything outside the norm in terms of where we are today, which is below 4% NPL ratio overall. And even our historical rate at which restructured facilities devolve into NPLs is, again, very low, probably about 2 or 3%. So all in all, the stage 1 names improved because of the proactive steps we are taking from 2019 and 2020, and we do expect that trajectory to continue.
Next question, please.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Adesoji Solanke of Renaissance Capital.
Hi, Herbert. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Adesoji Solanke from Renka. I have a few questions. The first one is just around the issue you mentioned in the UK business. If you can just shed some additional color around the underlying transaction, what led to the provisioning increase, and how exactly COVID affected this. And I'm also wondering, because we didn't necessarily see an uptick in NPLs, so were these off-balance sheet risks? I presume that's what it was, because they said it was structured trade. The second question is around the write-offs. If you could just clarify the numbers again, I think you said it was well over 100 billion. Can you just clarify, what drove the significant write-offs? and how much more are you expecting for 2021? And the third question for now, I'll ask the final few ones once I've got your responses, is the additional provisions you've taken through equity, I think it was about 25, 26 billion. Can you just clarify what's behind this and why the central bank has required you to take additional provisions on these facilities? I'll ask the additional question after your initial response. Thanks.
Okay. I'll speak to the first one, and I think Greg would address the issue of the additional provision and all through the additional provision that you have mentioned. With respect to Access UK, they had a portfolio of, as you know, it's one of the strongest banks in trade. They had a portfolio of agro-processing companies that were based in Singapore and all of that. And the way it worked was that they issued bills of exchange, which were processed across our counters. Now, those bills of exchange from their customers have been honored, if you like. But what had happened is that some of those customers were unable to repay their loans, all right? And by the way, these things were backed by insurance, were on their own unable to repay their loans because, again, their working capital cycles and all that were affected largely by COVID. These are export processing companies, if you like. So what has happened is that whilst they have shown weakening financials, some of them have started producing good results again, and so I've started servicing the exposures even between the end of the financial year and date, whilst the others have not come out yet. And so what we've done is to put a claim against insurance because there were credit insurance that were taken fully on these facilities. So that is the specific nature of what happened. Now, in terms of provisioning, I think what we took was about $65 million of provisioning on what was a book of about $114 million. Our expectation is that over the next 18 months, I think we should be able to see ourselves clawing back something like 75% of it because of how insurance works, 75% to 80%. I think we'll see a portion coming in this year, and the rest should come in the next financial year. So that's how we see it happening. I don't think we'll see any further deterioration as far as that book is concerned because we went into the book painstakingly together with our auditors. And as you would be aware, for a bank that never had anything like this, it created a lot of issues working with the auditors to find out what could have gone wrong. So I think we've come to the bottom of it. We will basically start to claw back some of it in the course of this financial year and next year. Some of the obligors, like I said, have recovered a bit and have started posting positive results, and so we do not have a problem on some of them. But those that are very weak, as we've seen, what we intend to do, or what we are doing, is basically calling back on insurance. But I think the fundamental thing across all the facilities, and there were about seven of them in total, is that there were no issues of criminal negligence or anything of the sort. All right, it just came from the fact that processing their products, exporting their products, and the fact that supply chains were broken coming from COVID has affected all of those companies. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Herbert. I'll speak to the issue with respect to the write-offs and the regulatory risk reserves. So for the write-offs, the write-offs we've always communicated over the past couple of years is part of our strategy for resolving some of the names we inherited from the old Diamond Bank. We did communicate in 2019 how much we were going to take approximately to clean up the loan book. Again, we always try not to bury our heads in the sand. We will take the appropriate balance required in terms of impairment, do the write-off where we don't see a structured set of cash flows coming out, and then we chase very aggressively for recovery. And that is why in the course of 2019, you saw significant recovery, well above 30 billion, closer to 40 billion. In the course of 2020, the same thing, again, well over 30 billion in recovery. Now, all of those come on the back of those write-offs that you see. So, again, it's part of the strategic steps taken to clean up the loan book, and that's why you have seen a very rapid migration in terms of, you know, stage three loans as a share of the loan book from about 14-odd% at the point of merger with Diamond Bank all the way down to 4.2% today. So it's a combination of those write-offs plus the proactive steps that we took to having the appropriate structures for some of those loans, having the early conversions from dollars into naira. So it's part of that mix of measures that the bank had taken to ensure that we get the loan book very resilient and back to where it was before the combination with Diamond Bank. So that process is tailing off gradually. Obviously, we've done significant heavy lifting around that. We'll continue to recover back some of those write-offs in the course of 2021 and 2022, but the tailing off gradually as we tidy that up. Now, you also spoke about the regulatory risk reserves. Now, that is the avenue by which the regulator balances off the difference between the IFRS 9 audited numbers and the regulatory landing point, because they do their separate independent audits of the book. Whenever there's a difference, as you know, they pass it through those regulatory reserves. Now, in the course of 2020, so it's not as if there was a big jump in any or deterioration in asset quality. Rather, it was more of, you know, the central bank uses an escalation protocol. So you go to substandard, then doubtful, then lost. So for the same name that you saw in the previous year, that was at 10%. If they move that name to doubtful, you see a ratcheting up in terms of that differential between the central bank's provisioning and the IFRS 9-based provisioning. Of course, the IFRS 9-based provisioning takes into context the significant collateral support for those facilities. Hence, you continue to see that gap. It goes up and down. It all depends on what happens with the stage 3 loans. So that is the explanation for that. So it's actually an improvement in terms of overall NPLs, as we have shared. However, within the NPL that already exists, the additional provisioning can come because CBN escalates from substandard to doubtful to loss. Whereas under the stage 3, it's all taken as one and it's your collaterals that protect you. I hope that clarifies that.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Just a few follow-up questions. The first one is around, can you share what your outlook is for interest rates? Because there's been, I guess, there's some sort of broad-based pickup in interest rates going on the ground. What's your outlook? How do you expect this to affect your funding costs as interest rates pick up? And to what extent do you think you can reprice loans upwards in this environment, particularly considering the significant conversions you've done from FX to Naira facilities? The second question is around agency banking. So the transaction value you reported, I think that was 8 trillion Naira, if I got that correctly. Or if I'm wrong, whatever the value was, but basically, can you break down your agency banking transactions into what is withdrawals, deposits, P2P transfers, and bill payments? I don't need the actual numbers, just in terms of percentages, what sort of the share of these transaction types happening at your agency banking? And finally, what's your expected quarterly OPEX run rate for this year? And do you have some sort of nominal PBT guidance for 2021? Thank you.
Okay, I will speak to some of this. I will give you my own general view of interest rates and so that you can have a better appreciation of how far the franchise has come and what you expect to see in 2021. I would let Victor Itoku speak to issues around agency banking, the volumes at 8 trillion Naira, looking at the breakdown in terms of the transaction type, fees, et cetera, and how we see this building up over the next year. I'll speak as she would support me, obviously, with respect to OPEX and the fee guidance for 2021. Now, let me put it this way. One of the areas we have been greatly criticized have been on our cost, more specifically our cost of funds in the past, because we're seen as a wholesale bank. And before the combination with Diamond, we had managed to bring this down a bit. At the time we did the combination 2 years ago, it was still high when you looked at us and looked at us against our comparator banks that had cost of funds around about 3%. Our own cost of funds at that time was about 5.9%, et cetera. Now, what we've seen is that the interest rate, we've been able to double up on the growth of our savings accounts and current accounts, has led to the cost of funds dropping from 5.9% at the beginning of 2020 to what is about 2.9%, actually less than that, about 2.7% at the end of 2019. Now, on an actual basis, on an average basis, you wouldn't have seen the full effect because it takes time to have wound down the overall cost portfolio, all right, to get to that figure at the end of the financial year. On an actual basis, it is less than that. Let me put it this way. So it's probably about 1.9%, etc. So what has that done? It has brought us very close to our comparison much room for much more improvements, if you like. So what this has done is to, if you like, up to 300% difference in price. Interest rates ticking up, we are determined to hold our cost of funds. Obviously, a bit of change, but our view is that in the main, we will see our cost of deposits at about something like at less than 2.5%. All right, but our overall cost of funding should be about 2.5% because you know the central bank debiting you. You're having 60% money in CR. We should find ourselves well below 3% through 2021 as far as cost of funds is concerned. Now, are we repricing the loans? The answer is yes, we have to because of the increased price that we're seeing on the deposit side. I think what is most important and what you are alluding to is what type of NIM are we likely to see. Our expectation is that we should start moving gradually towards the 7% NIM ratio, if you like, from what is about 4.9 right now. At about 7%, 7.5%, we should be reasonably comfortable, particularly given the risk profile of the clients that we have. So that is my view with respect to interest rates and the implication on our business. We will see significant benefits given what we've seen, even though interest rates are going to go up. But in Access Bank's case specifically, we're going to see an expanding NIM, all right, because of how far we've driven our cost of funds back down by when you look at us compared to other of our comparative banks. Now, in terms of OPEX, I think we will hold at this price. We will now start to fine-tune and bring down our OPEX. As Sheyi mentioned, what you see on a common sizing basis is basically matched against inflation at about 10%. I think that we will try to hold the figure to where it is. If we can, we'll bring it down, but I don't think you will see any uptick, even though inflation is going to try to push that figure. I think it is safer to assume that we'll hold on that figure rather than grow on it. If we can shrink it, we'll shrink that figure. On our fee guidance, and of course, Shea will speak to these two points as well to support me. I think, quite frankly, you've seen a big expansion as far as retail earnings are concerned and digital banking revenue. You also have seen significant customer acquisition and increased customer velocity from what we're doing. My expectation is that, again, if you begin to imagine that all of these things started perhaps in the second half of last year, given that, you know, the 2019 really was 3 months of 9 months of diamond, the impact of integration and all, I believe that in 2021, you will see, in my mind, a 25% increase at the minimum as far as commission and fees are concerned. And I think you'll see it in the first quarter, you'll see it in the half year. Those figures are cast in stone because we are seeing increased customer activity. And in spite of the fact that we've done more measures than any institution in the country and the continent perhaps, we've seen our systems now settling down and we're seeing phenomenal throughput in terms of customer transactions, velocity, NIP volumes, et cetera, which is a reflection of the fact that we're getting customer activity to where it ought to be, all right, after integration. So those are the kind of things that I've seen, but I'll let Shea say one or two more things about it, and then we'll take it from there.
Thank you, Harold. I mean, just like you said, we are expecting about a 25% year-on-year increase in commission and fees. This is outside of other operating income. So this would take us to something like about 36 billion on a quarterly basis in terms of what we are looking at. I mean, if you look at 2019 to 2020, we grew commission and fees by 27%. So what we are seeing is not outside of what we've done before. So this is doable. And I think we started to see that impact even within the first quarter of the year.
So I'd like
Okay.
Thank you, Soji. You asked questions around the 8.3 trillion naira worth of transactions around our financial inclusion segment. Now, this cuts across, as you know, we have about 20 million mass market of financial inclusion customers in the bank. And when these guys are transacting, they do so in millions. Last year, we had about 350 million transactions from this group of customers across the year, and about 8 trillion naira, giving us an average of about 23,000 naira average transaction count size. And this is across our agency banking, where we have about 50,000 agents last year. This year, we are going to close the year with about 120,000 agents. So we are doing an average of 300,000 transactions a day for those agents. That was last year. This year we are doing about 500,000. So we are expecting that we see a lot of 10 trillion naira in this segment in transactions in this year. And we are hoping to open about 3 million accounts from this segment. So this across agency banking, better activities in the marketplace. In terms of transaction types, these transaction types that cover here are largely around cash deposits, cash withdrawals, and transfers. In terms of proportion, I would say transfers would be about half of that percent, cash deposits 40% and 10% for cash withdrawals 40% and 10% of cash deposits. So that's the structure, and that's what we expect to do in 2021. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Adesoji, does that complete your questions?
Yep, that's very helpful. So transfer this half, withdrawals 40%, deposits 10%. Yep, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Rona Garnier of EFG Hermes.
Good afternoon, Herbert and team. Thanks for taking the time this afternoon and taking my questions. Three or four questions. Firstly, on your payday loans, could you just give a bit more information specifically on what kind of NIMs you earn on that product and what the underlying risk charge is? That's the first one. The second question is on your capital. So if I look at your capital adequacy calculations, I'm a bit surprised. Because if I look at the credit risk, it seems to have declined by about 8%, whereas when I look at your net loans, it went up by around 10%. So could you maybe just share some thoughts on you know, why we were seeing opposing trend on those two items? My third question is on your trading income, if you could just give some guidance on what you expect from trading income this year. And the final one is on your net open position. Could you just tell us what the net open position is specifically for Access Bank Nigeria? Thank you.
All right. So I'd like Victor again to speak with respect to our payday loan and the underlying risk charges associated and the risk mitigation arrangements, which we actually have, and Greg can also speak to that so that he can derive some comfort. Greg will speak to the issues of capital adequacy, and of course, Shay would address the trading income and the NOP position.
Okay, all right. Now, under the payday loan, there are digital loans. There are four types of loans here covered. One is the payday loan. These are technical tenor loans, especially for employees. Ticket size averaging 25,000 to 30,000. We have the small ticket loans. These are also for employees. Average ticket size 50,000. We have device financing. This is essentially to buy phones in our collaboration with telcos. And we have salary advance, which is largely a 12-month facility, largely again for employees. Average ticket size is 200,000. So these are the four types of digital loans that we have. Essentially, these loans are largely for employees whose payroll
come to the bank and we manage their accounts. And therefore, and we have a process where there is an auto collection mechanism where they pay down just upon getting their salaries every month. Now we have another group of customers who are not employees, but who get small businesses who get a regular stream of inflows throughout a month. Those also come in. And in terms of how we determine eligibility, first of all, it has to be regular inflows. Two, it is a percentage of your trim mean over a 12-month or 24-month period. And this is done, and collection is done automatically. Now, we also set aside 1% of the 2 or 3% fees as a loss pool account, well, put it aside for any kind of delinquencies that occur. We closed last year on this portfolio at about 4.5% in NPLs, and that was far below the amount that was set aside in loss pool accounts to cover it. So clearly, it's a portfolio that is doing well, but we'll keep improving the algorithms and the efficiency of collection. And that's what we keep doing. And our plan is that it will remain below a 5% NPL portfolio. Thanks.
All right. I do hope Victor answered your questions properly, but I think he tried to summarize it. But these are very stringent algorithms that have been derived to pull out again what types of risk charges, what interest rates, which comes to somewhere about 4% flat on a monthly basis. I think in terms of the charges that go in on an annual basis today, I think, first of all, even the NPL ratio is about 6 or 7% as far as that 4.5% as far as that aspect of the loan book is concerned. But let me just speak a bit to the trading income and net open position. First of all, our net open position limit, which is about 10% of our shareholders' funds, is about $110 million today. Our trading income that we expect in 2021, not very different from what we saw last year, and you can go back in time and see what it is by the time you look at the amount paid on the treasury bills, and of course what you also see with respect to the cost on the derivative side. You will see anywhere between 86 billion in my view and 100 billion in 2021, not more than that. But I'd like Greg to speak on. Rona, if you can repeat the question on capital adequacy. I think you were speaking to the reduction in the risk-weighted assets or something like that. So Greg is going to speak to it, and if it's not the exact question, please, I'll appreciate it if you can repeat.
Okay. Thank you, Herbert. Sure. So I think we find a couple of things that the bank has always driven in terms of how we approach our capital management. I will focus very strongly on efficiency. It's a pattern we've seen over the past 3 or 4 years. So we try to get our loans as supported and mitigated as possible by deposits. And as we've shared earlier on, we've seen a significant growth in the funding base of the bank. Now, that funding base, a good chunk of it is structured to also support loans that are within the bank. Now, that provides significant credit risk mitigation. And under the rules that we apply in Nigeria, those mitigations are direct deductions before you compute your risk-weighted assets. So that's number one. It's a fundamental point. The second one is around what is called credit risk here includes a whole raft of things. Some are even sovereign-type instruments at 0% weight. So you might see a growth in total assets, but you will not see a growth in credit risk mitigants in risk-weighted assets if a significant part of that is going to investment securities, for example, which we did have in 2020. Now, those are zero-weighted. So all in, the combination of zero-weighted investment securities and significant credit risk mitigants, like I shared earlier on, that combination is what has meant for that slower growth in risk-weighted assets overall. I don't know if that addresses your question. If it doesn't, you can come back and I'll throw more light.
No, that helps. Just maybe one or two follow-ups.
Firstly, on the net open position, Herbert, you indicated that it's 10% of shareholder equity. I was just wondering how you calculate that, because if I look at your US dollar balance sheet on the financials, it seems, you know, the net open position could be as high as about 1.3 trillion naira when I take away your assets from your liabilities. So maybe if you could just help me, you know, give a better understanding on that. And then just the final one on your special bills that you received from the CBN, I guess, in December. Could you just highlight how these bills have been classified? Are they marked to market fair value through P&L or held to maturity? And if they are held at fair value, are you expecting to record losses on that given the yields have increased?
Okay.
Hi, apologies, this is the operator. Unfortunately, we seem to have lost your sound. If you can perhaps move closer to your microphone.
Okay. I think, if I understand, you are trying to ask questions with respect to our overall balance sheet aggregate, okay, and you are raising that we have a net open position of about 1.6 or 1.3 trillion naira, which is not obviously not correct, because I think you need to look at the aggregate balance sheet, all right, to understand what it is. And then issues around the fair value, you know, and what is taken into P&L, I think. But she is going to speak to it, then we'll take it from here.
Thank you, Eric. So let me take the special treasury bills. I think we have about 36 billion, and it's a fair value to OCI. That's how we've done the treatment. With respect to the open position, so yes, if you look at the on-balance sheet, you will see that. But if you look at the aggregate, both on and off balance sheet, what you see is actually $110 million. So you might be right if you look at it. But if you look at it, you have to take both the on and off balance sheet, because what is causing that gap on the on-balance sheet is the swaps, and on the contingent side, you also see it on the contingent side of the balance sheet, and therefore you have to look at it in totality to really see what the real position is, which is about $110 million, as I said earlier.
Okay, so it's $110 million short, right?
Short position.
Okay, understood.
Renat, does that conclude your questions?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next question comes from Kato Makuru of ESG Hermes.
Hello. Thank you so much, Herbert and team, for a very detailed call. I'd like to go to page 15, where you talk about your operating costs. I was reading the transcripts of the Diamond Bank acquisition when we had our last call, and I specifically remember, and I saw in the transcripts, that you talked about $30 billion a year in cost synergies. So can you tell us where the $30 billion were in the past year? Because I don't see the very strong cost savings in those numbers. Then I had a question. I noticed that the costs related to cash processing in FY20 went up from 3.7 billion to 9.9 billion. I mean, it's an amazing increase. How is that possible, given the extent of the increase in your digitization? I mean, I was so impressed to see your transaction values increasing 82% year on year. That was amazing. And then why is stationery and postage and stuff like that going up from 1.9 billion to 5.9 billion in a year like last year? And lastly, I would say I'm really focused on the cost, because that's where I thought the benefit or the merger was. That's why I'm asking all these cost questions. And business travel. Business travel was only down 30% year on year in 2020 to 7 billion naira. How can business in a year like 2020? Thank you.
Okay, I'll start to answer some of the questions, and with respect to OPEX, and then Shei will get into the more detailed numbers, whether it is with respect to travel costs and all of that. Now, the cost savings you probably saw at the time we did the merger, in terms of synergies,
we spoke to a couple of issues. It had to deal with, one, overall cost of funds, two, overall cost of operations, and of course at that time we broke it down into things like head office costs, operating costs, i.e. staff, you know, bringing staff to the right numbers, et cetera, that needed to be done, and all of that. Now, it is that total that brought about what we saw as cost synergies of about 30 billion, if I recall. If you take the cost of funds, for instance, all right? Yes, and this was over 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah, now, but it was 30 billion per year. I'm reading the transcript right now. Sorry to interrupt you, Herbert.
Still
it was 30 billion per year.
Still not a problem. Now, if we take all of those cost items and we take the cost of funds, for instance, the reduction that we've seen, all right, we are reducing our cost of funds at the time of the merger, which was about 7 or 8%, all right, and today that cost of funds has come down on a nominal basis. Average, weighted average last year to about 3%. Cost of funds on an actual basis, actually, was 2.4%. Now, even if you took only that figure and you asked what did it come to, all right, I'm sure that it makes a mess of this whole, of all of these numbers. Now, you can say that, oh, the general interest rate environment crashed. Now, but by how far, all right, did ours go down, all right, and what was the mix? What was the growth in savings accounts, which was one of the strengths we saw in Diamond, and some of the products which we've pushed? I think today we are the second as far as our savings volume is concerned. At the time of the merger, our combined savings account volumes was about 600 billion. Today, that figure is 1.3 trillion. And there's only one bank that compares to us as far as the savings account is concerned, and I think that is First Bank. Now, if you do the same thing and you ask for current accounts, it's the same thing. All right. Now, this is coming as a result of exploiting the benefits of the customers coming, retail accounts coming from the merger. And we've not finished that process yet, like I said. The system is only just settling down. And if I've got to give you in finer details, all you need to do is to look at our NIP volumes, all right, and that is basically a reflection of the retail number of retail transactions you are doing. Today, I think we have about 20%, 19 or 20% of that market. When we started, I think Access Bank probably had maybe about 8%. Diamond Bank had about 6 or 7%. So that combined figure is now showing the real value. So those are the synergies we spoke about. So in terms of cost of funds, you'll see it. Now, the other costs, for instance, head office costs, we said we're rationalizing. That has now been done. But the full impact of that has not even become manifest because those head office buildings that we do not require have been sold only just, actually it happened, it's towards the end of the financial year, 2020. Now, we can go on. Now, obviously, some of the costs could not have been obtained because as COVID came in, all right, the system did not allow us to do the rationalization. And I'm sure you saw quite a bit of the uproar that came up at the time at which we were basically trying to rationalize staff, all right, and the system said nobody was allowed to do anything at the particular point in time. Now, if we move on to the savings on CBN cash deposit and all of that, those are some of the things we spoke about. We're going to see savings of 10.505. But let me tell you what has happened, which is actually the contrary and better for us. When you see cash processing growing from 3.7 billion to 9.9 billion, what it has shown is the significant volume of transactions being processed through the bank. Okay? Again, if you see what would have happened in terms of the buildup of money that we have with central bank coming from the foreign exchange and customers who are depositing $10,000 or whatever it is. Now, the cost of processing all of that has grown, but it's also manifest in the balance sheet. Now, the question would be, how efficient are we going to basically push that balance sheet for the benefits to come out? And I think those are some of the things you're going to see in this year. So in terms of the cost savings, Ronak, I want to confirm to you that we are right on track as far as those cost savings are concerned. You know, and if there's any distortion that has come from the reduction as far as interest rate environment is concerned, I think the volumes that you see with respect to the current account and the savings accounts, purely as a result of the new efforts, all right, that the merger has pulled, would deal with this cost savings. But I'd like Shay to speak to the other aspects of cost issues that have to do with travel costs and all of that. So today we've gotten about 33 billion out of the 36 billion that we're expecting to see on an annual basis. Shay, go ahead.
Thank you, Herbert. I think I will just pick up from where you stopped. And like I said earlier, those comparatives are not exactly correct because of the timing difference of 3 months. I think that's so the numbers that you're saying 1.9 is not exactly if we were to which we did, the numbers are not that. But I will now. Did you do the 30 billion in savings in cost? Yes, we've done it. And if you look at just what happens, if you look at the issue around SBU and branch operations, we've done it now. I think I'll take each one. Now, cash processing, clearly what has happened is that our transaction volume, all right, has more than doubled, all right, over the last 2 years. You know, and even over the and even in 20, even with COVID, we've seen that, you know, a number of transactions that we do. Now, you may be interested to know that, you know, one in every two transactions either end or stop in Access Bank in terms of cash deposit. So we've seen significant, and we are seeing it on the balance sheet. You know, so maybe this is the cost of the balance sheet that we are carrying. So this is real in terms of what we are seeing in terms of cash processing charges. And for dollar cash, the cost of what you pay today is significant for what has gone up from what we used to pay. I think it's about 1.5% that you get charged for every dollar that you go out process with the Central Bank of Nigeria. So there are real costs associated with the business that we are doing. Stationery has increased also because of the volume of the business that we're doing. Now, for some of the things that we had to replace some checks from customers for free because we had to then change stationery, change cards, just because of, because we kept doing, so even after the merger, there were things that we left and we put into business as usual. We stopped counting them as merger expenses. So all that is still ongoing. Now, business travels, as you've seen, I think that the last call was when we said that this business cost was going to come down, and it has truly come down. What we are going to see over the next, in 2020, is that number that will be further. So it's a gradual reduction, and we believe that by end of 2021, what you see will be half of the number that you're seeing, and we gradually continue to reduce that to a level that at least we are comfortable with.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chef. Would it be possible going forward to have a slide that shows, you know, what you've done in terms of cost synergies versus, you know, your targets, just so we can have a way of saying, you know, Access has done a really good job on this consolidation and this is why. Last question on the whole consolidation is, if you look at your return dynamics, like return on investment or accretion dilution, how is it going versus what you expected from the acquisition? To what extent are you ahead or below targets in terms of accretion? If you thought the deal was accretive in year one, how much more accretive has it been? And I guess another way of looking at it, do you think are you happy with what you paid for Diamond? Do you still think you got a very good deal? Thank you.
Well, I'll speak to that. I'll speak to it theoretically, and then if you need numbers to support it, we'll pull out the numbers. Now, just a couple of things. You know, we had, in the course of the merger, we had shared with the market some of the things that we're going to do. And if you recall, we had said we're going to close 100 branches. Obviously, we've not been able to shut those branches. Well, we shut them because of COVID, all right? But all that was shut in real terms was 50, okay? Just because of the difficulty in shutting branches. Now, have we been able to make sure that those branches become profitable? They've broken even right now, okay? And so we'll start to see the benefits that have come from it. Two, Diamond Bank came with its own issues around bad loans and, of course, currency exposure. We're very quick to convert all of those into local currency and to start to take the provisioning on it, as you've seen, and, of course, to do the recoveries. If you see the recovery figures, you will find out that quite a bit has been done, all right, and I think we've basically recovered more than 50% of the figure that we said we're going to do. I think the real benefit was in the creation of a strong retail powerhouse, and I think without doubt that is becoming manifest day in, day out, and you'll see it in our current account numbers, you'll see it in our savings account numbers, you'll see it in the new and emerging cost of funds, you'll see it in the retail commissions and fees coming from share transaction processing, you'll see it in the NIP volume, all right? All of those things were things that we wanted at the time that deal was done. So for some people who may have thought that it was a bit expensive, I think, quite frankly, we're happy with what we've seen. The results of 2021 are going into the future. We should a settled, merged entity would reflect exactly what we are trying to do.
So today, if you like, in the main, if you listen to what Shehi said, you'll find out that we are far beyond the figures we had said as far as major synergies are concerned. And so in terms of accretive value, we are far ahead. But I think those are not the numbers we are looking at this particular point in time. We are in a competitive market, all right, and we have the strategic posture which we are trying to pursue. And I think what is important for us is well beyond the accretive values of Diamond for us to be able to see ourselves as the leading bank in the country. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, just to let you know, the major synergies that we said we'll do over 3 years was 150 billion. At the end of year two, we have done 133 billion already. So we are well ahead of our run rate of those synergies. Secondly, before the
Did you say 130 yes. You're done, sir? 130 you've done?
Yes, we are 133 billion at the end of year two.
This is year two.
This is year
so
two.
3 years.
Of 3 years.
Okay.
Just to give you a bit some. Okay. Just remember, before the merger, we had about 12% or 15% of market share in savings or in deposits. Today, we are 25% of market share. Okay. Before the merger, we are about 18% of customer count in the industry. Today, we are over a third of the customer count in this country. There are 69 million bank accounts in the country. Today, we have about 40 million of that. So in terms of accounts that are registered with BVN and everything, we have well over half of the accounts in the country. In terms of market share in loan, we're also a quarter of the market share. So if you look at the size of the balance sheet, of course, you know that we have the biggest balance sheet in the country. Now, all Herbert was talking about is that as we move and digest this acquisition and measure into the third and fourth year and fifth year, you begin to see a lot more efficiencies, and then the profitability will not come to match the size of this beast. That's what you will see. But clearly, every single expectation from the merger, most of which are well on track.
Thank you, Victor. So the point is, what price do you pay for sustainability, for the size that we have, for the commission and fees which are becoming evident in the market as dwarfing anybody else, for the customer base that we have, active customer base, for the robust balance sheet, for the emerging cost of funds, which was a great criticism that we had. Those are things that we believe that coming out of the merger and the benefits and the learnings we've had, we think that we truly got a good deal. And even for the Diamond Bank shareholders, we think it was a fair deal to everybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And Carter, does that conclude the questions?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you're welcome to place your question either via the webcast in the question box provided. Alternatively, you're welcome to press star and then 1 on your touchtone phone to place yourself in the question queue. At this stage, there are no further questions from the online attendees. I will now hand over for questions from the webcast.
Right.
Thank you. So we have questions from Wale Okundrunbue of Sigma Pensions. First is, given the reversal of interest rates observed thus far, what is the impact on your trading income, positive or negative? What would you say you've done to help mitigate any downside? Second, how much of CBN special bills did you receive from the CBN in Naira terms? How are you classifying these instruments' fair value or amortized costs? Thirdly, how quickly do you expect a repricing in loans to capture the interest rate environment? Then, what is your view on FX liquidity and the exchange rate in 2021? There are further questions. Would you like to ask to those, or shall I continue?
Okay. I will start to speak to some of them. Those that we didn't hear properly, we'll ask Wale to ask again. I think, first of all, in terms of repricing of loans, we have started repricing these facilities. Obviously, there is a lag. I think that lag, in my mind, will be anywhere between 60 and 90 days for us to reprice, as far as the rate on loans. And I think we've started doing it, and we'll see the benefits. But I think what is more important in our own case was how quickly and where we kept the cost of funds. So I think you will see a NIM expansion, all right, and that NIM expansion will take us to around about 7.5% in 2021. With respect to FX liquidity, I think we are seeing a growing FX liquidity from the central bank. Obviously, there are a couple of things that need to be done. The I&E window needs to be a bit more active. CBN has been meeting its own end of the bargain. And I think what we need to do now is to push more investments, FDIs and FPIs to come into the system. But the IMTOs have also shown a significant increase, given where it was, last year. And I think for most banks, that figure has doubled. If you ask me, from less than, what would have been about, $400 million or $300 million a month, that figure, is getting close to $1 billion in a month, quite close, not just yet. So we've seen a significant growth. And I think that by the end of the, second quarter, perhaps we can see, as much as, $2 billion, in a month. So that is how I see FX loans getting better. But I think it calls for more planning and better planning. And all that the central bank is trying to do is for people to basically ensure that customer demands are met in a, logical and sequential manner. All right. If everybody comes to the market at the same time, irrespective of where you are in the world, you will see a problem. So we think that there's enhanced FX flows, and it will get better as the IMTO volumes come in a bit more. I'd like Sumbo to speak to issues around reversal of interest rates, in terms of interest rate direction and what it means to our trading income in 2021.
Thank you, Herbert. So what we had, as we had expected, if new interest rates were going to go up in 2021, following from all the macros and the indices we had seen. So this would not have an impact on our trading income because we had foreseen this and we had taken the necessary positions. As at December, when we saw that yields had gone very low, we also decided at that point to take some strategic positions, which have paid off now, as we've seen interest rates on treasury bills and fixed income securities going up, and from indications they will still trend much higher, especially as the federal government still has a lot of borrowing to do. So to answer in a nutshell, we're well positioned for this, and we expect our trading income to increase. Thank you.
Okay. I don't know, is there any more questions?
Yes, sir, there are some more questions. The question is, what products would you say dominate in terms of digital lending, payday, device acquisition, and et cetera? In view of recent transactions in the space, what are the are there plans to spin off your payments business to allow shareholders capture the deep value inherent in this entity? Then, how do you define board independence?
I'd like Victor Etoku to speak to which of the loans in our lending business dominates, and do we intend to spin it off? The answer is yes. There's so much more value to be created from it, and we think that by being independent and the creation of more sophisticated algorithms and pushing the market products a bit more outside the market, outside the bank, apart from the bank as a platform, there's still so much value to be created from it and value to the overall enterprise. But I'd like Victor to speak to which of the products dominates in that portfolio.
So like I said earlier, there are four products. But for now, there are two of them that are front runners, the payday loan and salary advance. The payday loan is a 30-day facility, as I said earlier, for employees. And salary advance is the short-term 6 months to 12 months duration. They are both, at first, the payday loan was almost 80% of the portfolio, but now it's down to 40% because the salary advance is now, we now have a few longer tenor loans coming in to 6 months. So right now, that's what it is. But for employees, it's still payday loan. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. There are two more questions. How do you define board independence in terms of shareholding? As I can see, there was a recent notification on the NSE that showed that the Access chair, who is an INED, holds around 0.02%, which may or may not fall within the threshold. I'm not sure. And then lastly, what drove the loss at your Kenyan subsidiary, and can you provide outlook on the segment going forward?
Okay. I think, first of all, I'm not aware of this notification, but I think 0.02%, and I don't know how many units that is, was certainly not up to 0.5%, or not even up to 0.1% of what the bank has, is still within an acceptable threshold. But I'm not even aware of this specific notification. But I'll check it out and I'll get back to you. Because up until now she has remained independent. So I'll just find out what it is. But I think it's well within the threshold. I think the next question had to do with Kenya. And of course, as you know, the Kenyan subsidiary only just started. And what we've done is, I guess, maybe some of the provisions coming from the prior transnational bank have been taken, and maybe that is what you've seen into it. But just to let you also know that all of those things were factored in at the time the negotiation was being done with respect to pricing. And so in terms of shareholder cost to us, I don't think that you would see anything significant. But that's what has happened there.
Thank you, Sylvia. No further questions.
Awesome. Thank you. Any more questions, please?
Confirm, sir, there are no further questions on the lines and neither from the webcast. Thank you.
All right. So I think that brings us to the end of the investor call for our full year 2020 financials. We look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks or perhaps at the end of the half year for the investor call at that particular point in time. But thank you very much for what was a very active session. Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.